Mudras are one of the practices of the Yoga Vedantic tradition, which draws forth from within the natural state of bliss. Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I'm your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator, host of the Vital Veda podcast, and someone who sometimes, well, actually quite a lot of the time, have my hands and other parts of my body, but particularly my hands, manifest into some particular sequence and some particular position, which is called mudra. And mudra, of course, Indu is going to explain all about, but it is that which draws forth from within a natural state of bliss. It is a becoming. It is a practice that you can use to shape your physiology, your body, or parts of your body, particularly hands, to create a certain effect, to create quite an immediate effect, to direct subtle energies within the physiology, direct energy within the chakras, which are the concentrations of prana, of life force, in the energy centers of the body. So this can all be done through the practice of mudra. And we're going to go into that with our guest, Indu Arora. Now, this may seem like a bit out there, but it's not actually. I guarantee you, you are doing mudras and you have done mudras in your life much more than you think. Yes, you, I'm speaking to you, the one who has maybe even if you've never meditated or never heard of this stuff, trust me, you've done mudras and you'll find out why. But this podcast episode is just to bring greater awareness to these mudras as another aspect to enrich your life with the connectedness of nature and the universe, and to enhance the richness of life by implementing mudras in a more systematic way rather than a spontaneous manifestation of energies which are occurring in you, which is a very other aspect of mudra. But we're going to go into how to utilize mudra. So our guest, Indu Arora, is a student of a lifetime. She is such a beautiful, humble mata, which is like divine mother. She emits this energy of mother divine. She shares the yogic and Ayurvedic wisdom, which brings simplicity to our complex lives. Indu is an author, public speaker, who has been sharing simple, effective, practical, grounded ways of living through yoga, yoga therapy, meditation, and Ayurveda since 1999. And she is going to do that for the rest of her life. She is such a beautiful woman, so humble, so honored to have her. It's really just have this energy on our show is so powerful. So if you enjoy this content, please share with your friend and take a screenshot and tag Vital Veda and also tag Indu Arora and share it and let us know your thoughts. You know, comment on the Instagram post associated with this and what have you taken away? What are you implementing? What's your experience with mudras? Leave a review. And at the end, we're going to share some special information regarding mudra training with Indu. And so, yes, enjoy the show. Another Vedic, one for the Vedic nerds, but really accessible to so many. This is really foundational, simple practices, which, as I said, you're probably already doing. Enjoy. So Indu, thank you so much for joining. Welcome to the Vital Veda podcast. It's such an honor to have someone of such a Shakti, such a divine, feminine, energetic exemplar of this energy back onto our show. I remember going through a time of looking at our guests and saying, well, you know, there's a lot of men, but it's nice to have that feminine energy and particularly that feminine energy rooted in Vedic, like that deep wisdom, mother divine. So grateful for you to contribute and be a part of this.
Thank you so much for having me, Dylan. And I appreciate you inviting me to your podcast.
Thank you for coming. So the first question I'd like to ask you is the same question we ask to everyone. And that is, what did you do today? What was your dinacharya?
Dinacharya for me is incomplete without contemplation, atmavichara. Moment of pause. This is the most important part of daily routine for me. So no matter what is going on in my life, I wake up with few moments of connecting. That is the key, that is the heart, that is the core of Dinacharya for me. That lays the foundation for the rest of the day so that you can pick these specific activities based on how you're feeling, how the day begins.
So you, I'd like to go into that. Are you contemplating? Can you go into more detail? Because for me, when I wake up, I kind of don't want to be thinking. I want to just stay in that sleep realm. That's why I typically meditate quite soon after I wake. Like I kind of just like staying in that more towards the field of transcendence rather than, oh, what do I got to do? What do I got to do?
I think that's a very important question, Dylan, what it means by contemplation. For different people, it has different meanings. For me, it is not about attaining a specific goal. It is not about charting a specific path. It is not about assessing where I am. It is really about getting in touch with myself, with my real self. And that means going beyond all possible thoughts, ideas, notions, prayers, affirmations, sankalpas. To go beyond all that, that comes later. First, it has to start with emptiness, nothingness, everythingness. And this practice actually comes from Vedic scriptures. It is called Atma Tattva Avalokanam. Now, I know many of the listeners, these terms may be new to you. So I'll explain it a little bit. Atma Tattva Avalokanam is, Atma means the self, the soul, the spirit, which in Ayurvedic scriptures is called Purusha, the consciousness. Tattva means the substance or thatness, tattva. And avalokanam means to see, to be in touch, almost as if you're looking in a mirror. So right upon waking up, instead of reaching out and thinking forward or thinking back and assessing, my day begins with just being in that still, just seeing if I can be in touch, being more strongly in touch with the substance of consciousness. That I called Atma Vichara instead of contemplating upon a specific idea.
Beautiful. So many ways that people would essentially be doing that. And another thing I'd like to ask you, which I think is such a beautiful thing to get to know you more, an interesting way, is what does the word Indu mean in Sanskrit? Because I just love people with Sanskrit names because Sanskrit is a language of nature. It's actually the sound of nature. It's that sound of what nature is intending to explain. I think it does it so well with people's names. So I think by knowing what Indu is, and I can kind of feel Indu a bit. I don't know it, but I would love to hear what it means. And yes.
That's very thoughtful of you to ask, Dylan. And to the listeners for whom this concept might be new, in India, when you're born under a very specific planet, you have a specific Jyotish chart, an astrology chart. And based on the time of your birth and based on the longitude, latitude of your birth, a specific akshara, a specific letter is given that may the child and child's name begin with that because that will carry that vibration. So E, that with which my word begins, it represents Shakti. It represents energy. Any mantra, for example, where there is shreem, cream, wherever there is E sound, it is symbolic of Shakti. But the word Indu means moon, the cooling, calming, harmonizing, nurturing energy of the moon, the lunar energy. Now, actualizing it is a lifetime or many lifetimes goal, but this is the vibration, this is the thought, this is the idea that my parents had in mind when they were naming me.
As one of my dear friends and pundits, who is like a master of ceremony, says, your face looks like full moon. And it really does. I'm sure you've received that before, but you definitely emanate that mother moon, that radiance, that ojas, that varshas, that glow. So beautiful. And just, it's a great connection. And what is there a difference in the type of moon between Indu and also Chandra or Soma or other words for moon?
They are one and the same. They, of course, whenever there is a change in the term, there is a change in the meaning. Even though they are synonyms, Chandra, Indu, Soma, they all have they are all pointing towards the fullness of the moon or the radiance of the moon. But which aspect or which quality do they determine? It changes. For example, soma means the nectar of the moon. And indu means that feminine energy, that lunar nurturing, calming energy of the moon. So absolutely right in asking, because one of my teachers used to say that when the meaning of the word changes for you, know that you are growing. It is the same word, but it's very unique in Sanskrit. I must say that every single akshara has at least 20 possible meanings. 20 possible meanings of one akshara, of one letter, of one syllable, of one phoneme, not one word. So imagine when so many different aksharas come together to form a word, they bring with them the permutation or combinations of 20 energies. And everything is held together by a root, a verb root. And that verb root gives it the direction. So it's so important. I urge all the yoga practitioners, Ayurveda practitioners, seekers, students, to contemplate upon the meaning of the word, or to have curiosity about it, because it will really open up that level of, that it will open up your mind to something that you may have, that may not come logically to you, that may not come just by mirror translation. In fact, mirror translations really create more confusion than clarity. There are so many examples that I have in my mind, but one in particular that's coming to my mind is Yog Nidra. It's becoming very, very common, which is wonderful. It makes my heart so happy when deep practices and philosophies are explored, when we as humanity and as yoga seekers are more open to that. But what also happens along with it is mistranslation and confusion. So the word Yog Nidra is commonly, a lot of times, may I say, simply said as Nidra. And when you take away the word yog from yog nidra, you're taking away the complete meaning of it. Simply nidra means sleep, but yog nidra means sleep of awakening. So it is not a practice of sleep. It is not really a practice of rest. It is a mudra. It is a state of mind when the mind is closest to the consciousness. See how when we don't understand the term, it can also change our goal. The misunderstanding can change the goal.
I love that. And you've just like inspired me and just got me so excited about going deeper into words and Sanskrit. I started studying Sanskrit for the past year and a bit, and I'm still just very academic, just breaking things up. I haven't yet got into actually the divinity of each sound, and you know, E is Mother Divine or Shakti, and like I haven't gotten to that upasana, that subtle realm of what it is, and it's there, but I'm learning with a university, so it's very academic. But
there is no rush,
of course.
What is one step at a time, and specifically when we are delving into the deeper realms of self consciousness, holding on to the threads of such wisdom sciences, it is from my personal life's experience, I feel there shouldn't be any rush. We rush when we compare that. There is so much more and I need to go faster. It is better to, just like in Ayurveda, chew 32 times to digest it. There is this saying, eat your liquids and drink the solids, which means chew it so well so that it becomes a part of you. Spend as much time as it needed for it to become you. Not just your thought, not just an idea, but it becomes you.
Exactly. So beautiful. Indu, I'd love, so you wrote a book about mudra, the sacred secret. And I'd love to go into that because it's one aspect of Yoga Vedantic tradition that I think is less common to the rising of not of yoga community, but even the meditation community. I think it's, as you said, it's the sacred secret. So it's a bit more secretive knowledge. And yeah, so if you could explain what is mudra? You mentioned it before as a, you referred to it as a body? I can't remember. But yeah, what is?
That's okay. The word mudra, if we simply explore the word mudra, it comes from two parts, the prefix mud and the suffix dra. And mud means a state of mudita, a state of delight, a state of bliss, a state of happiness, which is called sat chit ananda, which means the natural state of being. And dra comes from dru, which means to draw forth. So when you combine these two parts, just through the word, the meaning is that which draws forth from within the natural state of bliss or delight. So it's not a superimposition. It is not a doing. It is a becoming. And the way I have understood it in my limited exploration is mudra is a state of mind expressed through the body. And every time we practice a mudra, which if it is a physical mudra, which means there are other kinds of mudras too, if every time we practice a mudra, actively practice a mudra, for example, hold our hands or eyes or body in a specific gesture, what we are doing is we are creating, opening up that pathway for the mind to become that. But there are some mudras that we become in the process. So you're absolutely right. It's not a very common practice, but it's actually very common. Anything that we practice in yoga, whether we practice chat kriyas, any kind of cleansing practices, Kapalbhati, Agni Sartratak, or any kind of kriyas, for example, Surya Namaskar, or we practice any asanas, any meditation with or without use of hand gesture, it is actually a state of mind. And that state of mind, as well as that physical position of the body, is a mudra. And not just that, mantras are mudras. They are phonic mudras. They are sound mudras. Whenever the energy solidifies in taking a specific shape, as in the physical body shape, or the vibrations solidify and take the shape of a sound or word, it is a mudra. So mudra is a state of mind expressed through the body. And every time you do some physical mudra, it leaves a very unique signature on the breath. Every mudra leaves a very unique signature on the breath. And breath is that subtle aspect, the prana, that communicates to the mind, to the subtle body. So the breath changes, the prana changes, and the state of mind changes. I love this subject, so I can go on endlessly about it, Dylan, but I would like to see what other curiosities come to your mind.
I love how you said, although it's niche, so many people are doing mudras. I mean, so I think by the end of this podcast episode, you listening are going to be like, actually, I do mudras. I don't even know it. I think so many, for me, mudras, and even like you saying Surya Namaskar, like, of course, I do Surya Namaskar every day. Like, I've been doing it for years. And of course, there's so many mudras in that. But, and of course, there'd be so many, such a dynamic multitude of mudras. And for me, it's really a mudra in most, or in the case for me and that I've seen in other people, and that it really can be powerful. One of the ways it can be powerful is that the mudra itself is actually a spontaneous manifestation from energy and kundalini moving through the physiology. It's not like I'm doing this purposefully as a practice. It's like, this is why I'm saying people are already doing it. For example, my friend I was speaking to the other day, he goes, when he goes in the sauna, he does mudras, like just spontaneously comes out of him. And I've got one friend who in her sleep, she just goes into these like curling positions and these like full body mudras. She's someone who experiences a lot of kundalini energy and can be overwhelming for her. But I've seen, that's kind of the way I've seen mudras, rather than, okay, I'm going to hold my index and thumb together and put it on my knees and pray or whatever, which is a practice, and I'd like to go into, because that's actually what I'm also curious about. But yeah, it's that spontaneous energy is moving through the physiology, and it's come through in these gestures, whether it's through the hands or through the other parts of the body. So if you could talk on that, and also about not just the hands.
Yes, first of all, the listeners whatever position your body is in right now, the position of your spine, whatever position your hand is in right now, whatever position your eyes are they looking forward, gazing up, to the left, to the right, closed? You are in a state of mudra. It is impossible to not be in a state of mudra. One of the meanings of the word mudra is nonverbal communication, gestural communication. And nonverbal communication can be at three levels. Nonverbal communications can be interpersonal, intrapersonal, transpersonal. When I'm communicating with someone and waving hello or bye or come here or stop, that is interpersonal communication. When I am sitting by myself and simply spontaneously my fingers come together and are interlaced, or my hands are on my face, or my hands are on my heart, that is intrapersonal. That is body's innate intelligence rewiring, creating a circuit to prevent the loss of energy and to put us to support the bhavana that we are experiencing right now. The body automatically goes into the mudra, which is intrapersonal. Then it is transpersonal. As one of the examples that you mentioned, that when we are in meditation, mudras, we become mudra. We are not doing mudra. We work on our breathing and refine it into prana. The prana stabilizes the physical body, converts it into asana. The asana automatically becomes bandha. And that bandha is nothing but a state of mind, a mudra. So automatically when that bandha, that bundling of the energy, bandha means binding, that bundling, when you cross your legs or you in whatever position you sit, it is the bundling of the energy into the center. And that bundling and consolidation of the energy automatically creates loops and circuits in which the body ends up being as a consequence. Those are transpersonal mudras or transpersonal communication. Or there are specific mudras that are done in connection with very specific mantras. Like maybe many of the listeners may have heard about Gayatri Mantra. Each Gayatri Mantra has 32 mudras that go along with every single syllable of it, 24 mudras with every single syllable, and then 8 mudras at the end to lock the energy and lift it up and drop it back into the heart. So there are so many kinds of mudras. And yes, initially it could be overwhelming, but what I wish to communicate to the seeker, to the listener is, you are already doing mudras. Now let us refine it. Let us refine its understanding so that there is an element of awareness, there is an element of curiosity, and there is an element of empowerment. Because without this, we are not even aware of what we are missing out. And yes, there are not just hand mudras. There are eye mudras, eye gestures. When we gaze at the tip of the nose, when we gaze at a specific point, when we gaze at a candle flame, these are all mudras of the eyes known as tratak. Then there are mudras of the eyes that we practice when we are doing asanas, gazing at the thumb tip, gazing at the toe tip. There are mudras of the mouth. When you roll the tongue and bring it forward between the lips, in the pranayam, Shitali pranayam. Or when you roll the tongue back into the throat, as in Khechari mudra, or in the asanas and kriyas, when you stick your tongue out to the maximum, as in the lion gesture, Simha mudra. And then, of course, in so many asanas, there are mudras, but not every asana is a mudra. We have to understand that difference. Asanas can become mudra, can become the state of the mind, but they are not necessarily mudras. If we practice postures just as a robotic exercise, then they are just exercise. But when there is component of bhavana, sentiment, emotion, sankalpa, so when you are practicing tree pose, you're not just mimicking one kind of tree in the entire world, which is absolutely stable on one leg folded, and everyone wants to become that. That is not a mudra of the tree. If we look at the trees, no two trees look alike. And every tree moves. No tree is 100% still. So when we embody that treeness of the tree, that tattva, that is when it becomes a mudra, because there is no more doing, we become that. So mudra is a state of mind expressed through the body. And there are mudras of eyes, face, neck, hands, feet, full body. And then there are internal mudras, which are called bandhas. Then there are sound mudras, which are called mantras. So there are so many kinds of mudras. Hand mudras is just the beginning of it. Just like asanas are just the A of yoga, not the Z of yoga. In the same way, hand mudras are just the beginning of mudras. They are not the end of it. And most of the time, the different trainings that are there in yoga simply talk about one mudra, the joining of the index finger with the thumb. But that too with very incomplete awareness, incomplete connection to what it is. So what it becomes by the end of the day is just an Instagram mudra. It becomes like something that you look good in, that we can hold, and then it's held with stiffness. But that's not what Gyan mudra is. It is called wisdom seal Gyan mudra, because that mudra itself represents the entirety of Sankhya Darshan. This is our hand in Gyan mudra represents Sankhya Darshan. The three fingers represents the gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. The index finger represents the prakriti, and the thumb represents the purusha, consciousness. When the prakriti moves for yoga towards purusha, instead of moves away from purusha towards bhoga, when it comes to for yoga, then in that moment, we are beyond the three, sattva, rajas, tamas. We are beyond the three, vata, pitta, kapha. We are beyond the three states of mind, awake, dream, and dreamless sleep. We transcend the bondage of time, past, present, and future. But the moment we open it up, we become five. Five pranas, five elements, five koshas, five sensory organs, five motor organs. We just open up into five. There is division, there is pluralization, there is isolation, there is individualization. So this mudra is so powerful. I wish that even if the practitioner knows one mudra and does this with awareness, that itself will take you to the ultimate goal of mudra, that is mudita.
I love that explanation of Gyana mudra, and that's what we love to do here, is really unpack the deeper meanings. And you've just expressed how powerful that mudra is. But my question was going to be, why is that such a common mudra, or why is that the one we all know about?
What has been talked over and over becomes more common. But what happens is when we lose our curiosity of why, that is when we lose the connection of what is the importance of it. Since we are so much a culture of technique and names, so what happened is the technique and name was carried forward. But we are not so much a culture of curiosity that why this is the mudra in which we see the Buddha, why it is the mudra in which we see the yogis and yoginis, why it is the mudra that is the most common mudra to be seen, that yogis and yoginis and rishis and rishikas and realized beings and meditators choose to sit in, instead of thousands of other possible mudras that are there. We have lost that curiosity to ask why. What we are hanging upon is names, forms, techniques. And that leads to clutter, where we just keep adding and adding and adding and adding because we feel some kind of comfort in knowing the name. But I really feel that deep contentment comes from understanding, not just by becoming a hoarder of names. I cannot speak for the entire humanity. How did it become the most common one? But I can definitely say that we mimic. And since we see that most of the pictures and sculptures of the meditators and yogis and yoginis are in this mudra has been carried forward as the most important, which it is. But why it is important, we have lost the meaning of it. And that is why we see people holding it with so much sternness. it is not a gesture that you hold with so much strictness. There is a softness to it. There is an allowance to it. There is a becoming to it.
For me, it was always a mudra that would spontaneously come or with a slight amount of intention to keep energy circulating. Even if it's I'm feeling the pulse in my consultations of another person, I would have, and my other hand, which is free, would not be, sometimes I would just join the index and thumb together. It'd just feel the energy, my intention, my connection to the pulse. Or after doing pranayama and holding my breath, instead of just sitting there with the breath retention, I would bring my index and thumb together into that jnana mudra and it would just feel much better. And I think I went to that mudra or I referred to that mudra because perhaps I knew about it or because I saw it on all those statues and because it is so common. And now, interestingly, my guru taught me a mudra, which I don't usually get taught. I don't even know the name of it, but it's something like, and I'm just showing Indu, apologies for you listening to the audio, but I don't need to express what it is. But, and now I'm spontaneously doing that. So I think whether it's I'm just sitting, which is a different mudra, it's quite a different one, and whether I'm just sitting there and I'm resting it at my navel or I'm just waiting for someone to come and for my into my clinic or like I'm just doing that. So I think it's that interesting balance of getting a bit of knowledge and then that kind of ingrains into you and it is that default. It's just like a support. It feels just like an energetic support to keep things moving and flowing.
Absolutely. All the practices in yoga that lead to the state of yogaha, they are props. Every single practice is a prop, whether it's pranayam, whether it's chatkriya, whether it's apankriya, whether it's asan, whether it's yognidra, shavasan, these are all props to lead to the state of yogaha itself. And at some point, every prop needs to be dropped. And automatically in that state, you become whatever, however the energy chooses to flow. Mudras are simply holders or containers. They help circuit the same state of mind. It's almost like a japa, repeating the same word over and over and over. So in mudra, it is the same energy pattern over and over and over. So it allows you to expand and extend that state of mind or that state of consciousness that we are in. But a lot of time when the practitioner automatically goes into a gesture, what happens is again, the logical mind comes in. What is it that I practiced? What happened? What is it doing? How long should I do it? What is the name for it? And that's where we lose it. That when the intuitive wisdom, the Shuddha Vidya is taking over, don't let the limited mind to interfere. Not everything needs to be known to the mind. Not everything needs to be known by name. Not everything needs to be known by confirmation from someone or somewhere else. We need to also trust if in that clear, pure state of mind, the body naturally goes into a posture, position, gesture, let it be. Don't think, don't overthink, don't overanalyze. Let it be.
I love that. So for those, I think it's important to, if we can provide, I guess, guidance for those, because I think it is wise to systemize this a little bit and to, rather than just coming up, you know, letting them spontaneously, to create some, how can people, and obviously it's so different for everyone, depending on where they're at. And there's, and I just want to go back to what you said earlier about refining. It's just more and more about refining. It's like Gayatri Mantra, you can do 32 mudras for each syllable. It's like, wow, like it just, then there's probably more. There's like 32 ways of having your breath or for having which planet you have in your mind or which constellation. Like it'll just go on and on and on, which is the beautiful thing about the Ved is it's a constant refining and expanding on going deeper into a thing. I mean, and then you include the, yeah, it just goes on. But I think, yeah, how can people use mudras and approach it in a more systematic way to help contribute to the circle of this energy which they're cultivating through their work in yoga and Ayurveda?
There is definitely a need to study mudras, because we are so much into doing asanas and doing several rounds of Surya Namaskar that we overuse our physical, mental, and pranic energy. We don't know where to stop, when to stop, and how to hold effortlessly that state. And that is where mudras come handy. Where to begin? Become more curious about your body. Whenever you are contemplative, just observe. Do my eyes roll to the left, center? Do I naturally close my eyes? What happens to my hand position? So one suggestion is become curious about your body. That what happens to your hand position when you're sad, when you're contemplative, when you're stressed, just to observe what are those different loops that we stay in and how to break the unnecessary loops and how to reinforce the positive ones. Second, it is, as you mentioned, the book, Mudra, the Sacred Secret. This is a book that I wrote and it is now available in French and German languages also, apart from English. And I think in French and German, I think it's also available as an ebook. So this is something that is there. And in this book, I explore the science, the philosophy, the tantra, the historic connection, the textual references about mudras, but also more than 80 different hand mudras, and then therapeutic hand mudras, and the spiritual mudras, and the Gayatri Mantra mudras, the Nyasa mudras. So there is so many different kinds of mudras that are discussed. And I think a great place to start with is still hand mudras, because hands have such a unique connection to our brain that even though it is one of the most distant parts, but it is one of the most beautiful way in which we can reprogram and recalibrate our mind. So hand mudras are really very interesting and easy to practice. The other thing that I would suggest is be doing the Gyan Mudra with awareness. So maybe bring that into the practice and see how at the end of pranayama, at the end of meditation, during meditation, upon waking up, before going to bed, or if you are feeling naturally relaxed, how to expand and extend on that relaxed state of mind, hold the Gyan Mudra. But here is an important point. When you hold the Gyan Mudra, and I'm showing it in the camera, but I will also try to verbalize it. When you hold the mudra, do not press near the nail. Press at the mount, you know, the tip. In this case, a lot of time in books, it would say hold the tip of the index finger with the tip of the thumb. But tip here does not mean this part. Tip here means when you extend your index finger and look at from the side, you will see that the mount of the first phalange, the mount, which is the very center, almost like the center point of the first phalange and the center point of the thumb joining those tips is the main circuit point, not the tip that is near the nail, the tip that is in the center of the central. That is where you will feel the maximum concentration of energy. That is where the pyramid tip of the index finger is, of the thumb pad is. So join those and do not hold it too tight. Only as much pressure to maintain contact. So this is something that I would suggest to the listeners, to the practitioners, to those who are curious. And those, if this is something that you want to go deeper in, I'm doing a full training, 50-hour training this year, which is going to be online on mudras. We will discuss about hand mudras, body mudras, eye mudras, Gayatri Mantra mudras, and listeners, practitioners from anywhere in the world who have access to computer and internet can join. And there will be a replay if you're not able to attend live stream on those days. You can attend it later. That information you can find on my website. And I hope that you will benefit from these resources of practicing. And I hope you become curious about your own body, because truth is realized through this body. Not just by intellectualizing, not just by memorizing, not just by anticipating, not just by hallucinating. Truth is realized through this body by realizing it, by experiencing it. And mudra is a very clear, accessible, approachable pathway to that.
Love it. Where do we find the balance of, for example, that Gyana mudra of, because a lot of the time it's just like, I just want to relax, and any part of my thumb and index can touch, even if it's like my thumb touching the junction of the first and second phalange, or the second phalange. You know, just want to just whatever, I'm just relaxing and resting. Or is it important to really get that center point of the thumb phalange and the index phalange and join it?
That's a really good question. One is, if you're talking about the body position, you can practice mudras while sitting, standing, laying down. So that's okay. But when we talk about therapeutic mudras and spiritual mudras, there is actually specifics as to where to touch. The thumb or the fingers, each of the fingers and the thumb can be actually divided into three sections. For example, in Ayurveda, when we are checking the pulse, the finger is divided into five sections to see where do you feel the pulse, is which is in the Pranavata region, Udanavata region. And I know some of these terms may be new to the listeners, but as a student of the subject, I would say that if something is new, don't let it overwhelm you. Let it make you more curious. Even if it is the first time you're hearing it, just know at some point the seed needs to be planted. Maybe this is that moment. So each finger can be divided in from Ayurvedic perspective into five sections. But when we're talking about mudras and yoga and tantra, it is divided into three sections. And those three sections connect to the central channel, Sushumna, the Ida, and the Pingala. When we are in meditation, we don't want the energy to go to the right or the left, but to stay Madhyastha, to stay in the center. That is why holding and touching the center part is important. However, if you are deep into that state of nothingness, everythingness, or that state which is called absorption and meditation, in that state, it doesn't matter because you are becoming a consequence of what is going on inside. What is important is when you're entering into that state consciously, at that time, hold the mudra correctly. Afterwards, what happens? It's okay. And there is a complete chapter in the mudra book where I talk about these nerves, these nadis, and the name of each of these nadis and how they are important in the practice of mudras.
Sorry, I had a thought which came up while you were talking, and that's about eating with your hands. I mean, I personally eating with my hands for quite a number of years. And when I first went to India for 6 months, this was like a decade ago, and I learned to eat with my hands. And I came back and I could not eat with cutlery, because if I was to eat with cutlery, I'm like excluding one of my senses from the feast. So ever since then, like if I ever do eat with cutlery, which is on the occasion when I'm at some restaurant that I have to do it as politely, which is very, very occasionally, but I completely miss out. There's no doubt about it. And I'm completely unshameful because it's just too good to not. But I'm just thinking then, like, is there some mudra action going on? I know one of the benefits of eating with my hands, which my guru used to teach me, was that we have the planets in our hands, like palmistry. People can read your palm, believe it or not, and they can see all about you. So is there something, what's the energy happening there in relation to mudra?
Yes. First of all, I would like to just correct you a little bit. You did not learn eating with hands in India. You relearned it. You simply revisited
it. Yes. Good, thank you for that.
You know, that is a natural thing. The kids, the children, they automatically eat finger foods. They automatically lift with the pincer grasp and they eat it. What happens is, as a result of knowledge, at times knowledge is, you know, contraction, not expansion. So what happens is we learn and then we realize what is civilized, what is not. But here's the deal. Yoga and Ayurveda are in some ways totally shameless sciences, because in Ayurveda we say, do not suppress your natural urges. But if we talk about civilized society, you don't allow your belch, your burp, you suppress your defecation, you postpone your urination. You do all these postponements, and that is after sneezing we say, excuse me. After natural urges we say, sorry. It's just almost like a culture of shaming when there is natural urges. So in Ayurveda, we actually say that allow natural urges, because otherwise you're obstructing the pranavaha srotas, the channels of the prana. In the same way, in yoga also, yoga, as much as yoga is a state of consciousness, a state of union and absorption, yoga also means good combination. The same word has different meanings. The word yoga is used when something is a really good combination, like turmeric and black pepper. We call it yoga. We call it that it's a good yoga. So eating food with hands is a good yoga. And it is not just absolutely what your guru shared and what you experienced, that there is intaking of food is a complete sensory experience. That is what leads to satisfaction. That is what leads to contentment. Otherwise, the food becomes all you can eat buffet. All you can eat. You know, it doesn't, because there is greed. There is dissatisfaction. There is insecurity. And where does that come from? Because we are not completely satisfied. So when we bring that sense of touch, that sense of touch brings the experience of texture, temperature, the feeling, the bhava of the food. But where is the connection to the mudras? There are various connections. One is the hand position. When you are holding, taking a morsel of food or a palmful or handful of rice in your fingers, you're holding them by bringing all the fingers and the thumb together. When you do that, actually, this is a mudra. And this mudra is called Samana Mudra. The word Samana means similar. Sama, similar. And Samana is a kind of animating current in our body. And this animating current is a centripetal force which churns and brings everything to the center. So as we eat food and the food moves down through the peristaltic movement and it goes from the stomach to the small intestine, it moves, it blends, that opening and closing of valves from the stomach valve to the small intestine, that is organized and animated by Samana Prana. And this is also that animating force which allows the mixing of the hydrochloric acid in the stomach with the food to break down the heavier proteins. This Samana Prana is so crucial. It has its function in stomach. It has its function in small intestine. It has its function that actually controls the opening and closing of valves. It has its function that actually is the peristaltic movement. If this function, if this vayu, if this prana, if this animating force is weak, it leads to indigestion, it leads to gases, it leads to bloating, it can lead to constipation, it can lead to heartburn. So when you hold the hands in this mudra, automatically we are sending that message to the body to strengthen in that moment, which animating force? The centripetal animating force, which is Samana. And what does Samana does? It transforms that outside food into nourishment, making it sama, making it similar like the body, converting it into tissues. So this is really important, and each finger represents a mahabhuta, an element. The thumb represents agni, fire. The little finger represents water or apa. The ring finger represents prithvi or earth. The middle finger represents akasha or ether. The index finger represents vayu, maruta, or air. So when you are bringing all the fingers and the thumb together, in that moment, you're also sending that signal to the body that no matter what I'm eating, may it bring a balance of the mahabhutas. May it bring a balance of the doshas. May this food become nourishment. May it become me. May it nurture my tissues and my mind. It's such a simple thing, but it is a communication. It is an intrapersonal communication, which becomes a transpersonal communication. The act of taking in food becomes an act of offering, becomes an act of fire ceremony, becomes an act of yajna.
So, so beautiful. I want to comment on for two kind of perspectives. One is those who are feeling, oh, I feel overwhelmed. There's so many things to be doing. And then the two is that who's like, it's so awesome. I can't wait to try all these things. I think what I've been recently with my personal experience, it's just wherever you're at, you implementing these things one by one in a way that suits you and you, that you can integrate effectively into your life. It just makes life so much richer. It's like now I'm doing mantras as soon as I wake up. in the morning, and then when I put my feet on the earth, and then when I also go to sleep, and now I'm going to, you know, I have a mantra for after I finish eating. Like, it's just adding in bit by bit to however much you want and to however much you're receptive to. It's just increasing the richness of life. And this is what I love about the Vedics. It's like, there's a mantra for this. There'll be a mudra for everything. There'll be a mantra for, like, for when you shower, like, there's a mantra. Like, it's just everything. And it's just creating this, like, this summer, this greater balance and this connection to all things that are occurring in your life. So a connection to the, whatever physiological position my hand is in, or to what the sound is going on. It's just enriching everything. And it's so beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. I, as a student of this subject, I initially, when you introduced me, Dylan, you used very heavy words. I simply like to stick to one word, that I'm a student of this subject. And this is true from the core of my heart, that, and whatever I'm sharing with you, dear listener, it is as a student, that as a student, this is something I have understood and benefited from, that I hope you benefit from it, that I hope that it inspires you, and I hope that it doesn't overwhelm you. And even if it overwhelms you, take one bite at a time and chew it well. And know that mudras are first learned from our own being. The texts were written by someone who explored these states of realization from within the own body. So become curious about your own body. The more you become curious about your own body language, about your own body, the more mudras will start coming naturally to you. It will awaken your mental agni, your mental fire, to digest it more easily. And if you want to start with the practice, just start with Saman Mudra. If you tend to have any digestive system issues, just hold this mudra 3 times a day for 2 to 3 minutes each. But see if you can invite this mudra while you're eating food, and you can eat food with your hands. If not, practice it 2 to 3 times a day, 2 to 3 minutes each, just holding it with one or both hands. And then the second mudra that I wish for you to become curious of is the Gyan Mudra, the wisdom seal, that you can invite when you're doing subtle practices of pranayam, mantra, and meditation. And the third mudra is the Namaste Mudra, which is, I think, so important to understand. And it's so important to add bhavana to it. It is not just bringing the two hands with the sound together. There is a humbleness to this gesture. Understand that it is bringing together of the duality of the two sides, of the left and right, of Ida and Pingla, of opposing point of views. We bring them together with the gesture of gratitude. And that is Namaste. It is not done by separating the fingers. That isolation, that individuation is not Namaste. Namaste is the unification, consolidation, coming together. It's a gesture of coming together, of union. It's a gesture of gratitude. So next time when you hold your hands in Namaste, let there be that tenderness, gentleness in your palms, and not just in your palms. When we bring that hands close to our chest, we offer that connection through our heart. When we bring these hands close to our head, we offer that limited ego at the feet of the teacher, of the master, of the guru, or any person who is teaching us. It is an offering. It's a recognition. It is humbleness. Just start with these three mudras: Namaste Mudra, Gyan Mudra, and Saman Mudra. How about we start with just these three things?
Beautiful, great three mudras to start with. Just one, I love how you're refining these mudras. It's so important, especially this Namaste Mudra, which is such a common one. Any, like, in terms of, should our thumbs be touching our chest in Namaste Mudra? How's the connection with our hands to our body?
When we talk about Namaste Mudra, there are several variations of it. There is a version of Namaste Mudra where you stretch your arms all the way and stretch forward. There is a version of Namaste Mudra where you lift your arms overhead and stretch it all the way overhead. There is a version of Namaste Mudra where you keep the hands over the top of the head in Namaskar. There is a version where you keep it in front of the forehead. There is a version where you keep it under the nostrils. There's a version where you keep it in front of the chest. The most common one is when we keep it in front of the chest. It is, your thumbs are naturally facing your heart. We don't have to do anything. The most important thing is that keep the fingers close to each other. And keep them tender, not strict, not tight, not rigid. Keep them tender, keep them close, and then namaste becomes a recognition from the heart, a bowing, a gesture of surrender, of gratitude, of acknowledgement. And that is a very simple greeting, recognition of the other person, recognition of the other being. When we keep it under the nostril, that is communication with ourselves. Namaskar to my own prana. When we keep it in front of the forehead, that is something we do in front of teachers, gurus, masters.
Beautiful. Great. We're going to wrap up. I want to just go back. You were mentioning about the Mahabuddhas, the five elements on each finger. I think as far as I've learnt, it was not what you said. I've learnt from thumb to pinky, akasha, vayu, tejas, apa, prithvi.
Yes. So there are different understandings of fingers representing different tattvas. There are different understanding based on Chinese medicine. There are different understanding based on if we are connecting them to meridians and internal organs. There is a different understanding when we talk about, in terms of Vedic ceremony, fire ceremony. In that case, the mudras change. So the thumb represents, in that case, earth, and the ring finger represents fire. But when we talk about yog tattva mudra vigyan, and we talk about yog therapy, yog chikitsa through mudras or mudra chikitsa, in that case, thumb is consciousness. Thumb is purusha. Thumb is agni. And without the combination of agni, there is no transformation. So fingers from yog tattva mudra vigyan represents shakti, prakriti. And thumb represents purusha, Shiva. And the mudras are the union of prakriti and purusha, or shakti and Shiva. So it's important to understand that when the context and the bhavana changes, the meaning changes.
Beautiful. Makes sense, of course. Thank you so much, Indu. And if you guys want to learn more about Indu, check out yogsadhana.com. We will put all the resources in the website, including her mudra training this year. And anything else that you would like to leave the audience with? Anything exciting coming up? Anything you'd like to share?
I just wish each of the listener the best. I sincerely hope that every single moment that you have spent in listening, the energy and the time that you have given, I do not take it for granted. I sincerely hope that every single moment was useful, that it inspires you, and that it helps you connect dots between where you are and where you could be, that it inspires you and empowers you to move forward. If we meet again, I would be so delighted to see your face, to read your name, to know you more, and to share this path as a fellow student, as a fellow seeker on this path. It would be humbling and it would be delightful to meet you. And if for some reason we don't meet again, I am so content that we met, Dylan, through this podcast. I wish you the very best in life.
Thank you so much. Namaste.
Namaste.
Pretty special, eh? So if you want to go deeper into mudras, you got two things you can do. Pretty, like, good way to go deeper. One is read Indu's book, Mudra, the Sacred Secret. And number two, check out her mudra training, which is happening in October 2022. It's like a pretty awesome, like a 4-day, 50-hour training, something like that. It can be in person or live stream wherever you are in the world. So all of that, check out yogsadhana.com. That's yog, yogsadhna.com. Or if you just type in your search engine, not Google, but any search engine, otherwise Indu Arora, you'll get it. But otherwise, it's yogsadhana.com. and check out Indu's offerings. She's a beautiful woman. Check out the other episodes of the Vital Veda podcast. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss them. We got some serious good stuff coming up in this show. And remember to check out the Vital Veda community Facebook group. It's a Facebook group where we all share things like, hey guys, this mudra came up in my meditation. I don't know, but my hands just started going to this. Do anyone have ideas? And then you can get other people, oh yeah, that thing happened to me once when I was doing an ayahuasca trip. Or certain things, just sharing with like-minded individuals about coming up. Or, hey, I've got COVID. Does anyone have this herb I really need? I can't find it. Everyone's out of it because there's big herb shortages. Just like a like-minded community of individuals sharing resources, not just from me and the team at Vital Veda, but other people who may even know more about a topic. Or, hey, guys, I've got this. What can I do for it? I've got this issue, or I've got this great thing growing in my garden. What is it? Is it an Ayurvedic plant? So the Vital Veda community Facebook page, check that out. Until next time, my friend, thank you for joining. Much love.